I'm Thomas Davis. I'm minister of Carloway Free Church, way up in the Outer Hebrides in the northwest of Scotland.
Hi, I'm Andy Longway. I'm minister of London City Presbyterian Church in the heart of our capital city. And welcome to the Jesus Today podcast.
We're delighted to be back with you again. It's been so exciting to start this journey with you. We've been so encouraged by the feedback that we've received from our first couple of episodes. Thank you to everybody who has got in touch with us. If you want to connect, you can email us. Hello@jesustodaypodcast.com is our email address. Our inbox is always open. And you can connect with us on Twitter at Jesus Today Pod and on various social media platforms just by searching for Jesus Today Podcast. We're delighted to be with you today. Andy, how are you doing? What do you have for breakfast this morning? Tell me about your breakfast.
It was only a liquid breakfast, and it was coffee from one of our nearby coffee shops. Marina was dropping Theo off at nursery, so I got had a coffee. That's all I've had. What about you? What have you had for breakfast?
Oh, coffee, cup of tea, slice of toast. That is my standard steady breakfast. Slice of toast, cup of tea. In fact, about four cups of tea is what I tend to have. I could not cope if I just had a couple of coffee. I would be starving, Andy. I could not do that. Like within about 15 minutes of waking up, if I don't eat, I kind of just get a little bit kind of, I get even more annoying than usual for anybody who has to live with me. So I had my toast this morning and now I am raring to go. We are really excited today to have a dear friend and a special guest with us, Joe Bernard, who is Minister of Holyrood Evangelical Church in Edinburgh. Joe, welcome to the Jesus Today podcast.
It's great to be here, although I'm scandalized by how little both of you eat. I think I've had three breakfasts by now.
Tell us, what did you have for breakfast, Joe? This is the big question everyone wants to know the answer to now.
Well, I started with toast, but then I went on to porridge, and I've snacked since then. So evidently, we Americans eat a little bit more.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Joe, it's fantastic to have you with us. We're really excited to get the chance to chat to you today. Our theme for the episode today is following Jesus in an age that's full of distractions, whether that's social media, entertainment, their phones, whatever it may be. This is a massive issue that we face as followers of Jesus today. And so we want to think that through. And Joe's given a lot of thought to this and done a lot of work in terms of helping us develop good habits for discipleship. So we're really looking forward to chatting that through together. But first of all, Joe, tell our listeners just a wee bit about yourself, your background, and the work that you're doing in Edinburgh.
Well, I'm from the United States, but a lot of my working life has been here in Scotland. I was up in the Highlands working in a free church context, you know, for about 8 years in Kiltarlity. Was then back in the States for 3 years, really just building a men's discipleship ministry, cross-training ministries, and then over COVID, received a call to come to Edinburgh. So we've been here for 2 years this month, and married, have four kids, and just really grateful to be able to be a part of the mission here in Scotland.
Fantastic. And well, we certainly share that gratitude. We are so good, so delighted to have you as a friend and partner in the work of the gospel. And we're really looking forward to hearing what you got to say about this this issue that we face today. So let's start with kind of the bigger picture. You know, we're living in an age, you know, where there's technology and information just flooding into our inbox and onto our screens every day. Let's start by asking you, what's some of the blessings that brings? Not everything's bad. What's some of the good aspects that brings for us today?
In many ways, you know, we talk about it being a new thing to be in an information age, but the truth is we've been in an information age for hundreds of years, even from the printing press. I mean, 100 years ago, if you went to a public library, there was more information than you could ever consume. So this is something that's been around for a while. I think some of the distinctive blessings for the present moment, one of them is what's happening right here. You know, you think of podcasts, you think of the way that you can listen into conversations with whoever it is that you're interested by. And you can get access to books, you can get access to articles. It's true that, you know, there's no barrier to getting input on whatever question you might have and to get really good advice. And we talk about sometems we belittle life hacks and the tendency to look for those simple solutions. But the truth is, there's all kinds of really helpful advice available to us, whether it's how to read the Bible, how to create friendship, you know, how to deal with a personal struggle or temptation, there is lots of good information besides the bad information that's at our fingertips.
I think that's a really helpful way to frame it, that we've always lived in an information age, even from the printing press. Joe, what would be some of the challenges that living in an information age pose for us as Christians, and especially in terms of something like discipleship?
I think we need to think both about how the present age, it changes us in terms of the frame of our own mind, equally how it changes the objects, the sort of things that we're engaged with. So if you just think, for example, in terms of, you know, our own kind of mental faculty, I don't need to work hard to convince anybody that that we live in an age of distraction, that in a sense that the kind of distraction in the past, you would have had to go to a place like a casino to have an artificial environment that's there just to keep you focused, you know, on that present moment and constantly pull your attention any number of directions. You know, now we inhabit this with our phones all the time. So we're more distracted. And we also, I mean, anybody who, say, reads blogs, I mean, there's a word that, you know, you'll hear in blogs, listicle. You know, blogs are trying to reduce complicated things to three or four different points. And we think in terms of bullet points. That's not helpful when you're engaging in complicated topics, things that require sustained thought and reflection. So, you know, we're changing by this environment. And if we're honest, it's getting more difficult for us to think deeply and to sustain our attention, but equally the objects we're engaged with. So for example, the Bible. I mean, if we want to create a real contrast, imagine 600, 700, 800 years ago that you're encountering a Bible. And this is a manuscript that somebody has labored, you know, maybe for years to produce. It's got beautiful artistry in the margin. It's possibly chained inside a church building. You walk up and you think, this is sacred. God speaks through this text. There's something about it that makes you think it has a special value, and you have to handle it with a particular care. Now, contrast that to the Bible on your phone, which you've just scrolled through, you know, Instagram, and you've just, you know, scrolled through YouTube, and now you're scrolling through Isaiah, right? And you're kind of reading, but not really. And the truth is, it doesn't feel any different from that article that you just skimmed and, you know, discarded. So, you know, it's not just our own faculty, but how we come to the Word of God, how we treat it, the kind of reverence we bring to it. All of this is changing in this age. And so we've got to be very careful to, yes, hang on to the good, but also to avoid some of the pitfalls.
That's so interesting. And, you know, what you said there is like, it's not something I've thought of before, you know, how, you know, things like a casino, things like your video store, you know, where you used to go and rent a movie and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's just, you had to physically go to these places before, whereas now that is just all on your phone. It's so accessible, and that is so different. Even just reflecting on your own life, Joe, I remember when I got married almost 20 years ago, there was a whole pile of stuff you had to get. You know, you had to get a digital camera. They were just coming out then, and you wanted a camcorder because you wanted to catch memories. And then you would get you know, personal organizer so that your life was well diaried. And you know, you then have a wallet, and then you get a sat nav for the car. You had all these different things, and now all of them are just on your phone. They're just all right there. So even like in my lifetime, in your lifetime, you know, there's been some big changes. So, you know, in what ways, you know, are we facing new problems, or are we facing just the same problems that have come up, but just in a new form today? Like, thinking about your own lifetime, or maybe stretching back a wee bit further.
You know, there is a real sense, I think, we need to recognize a newness to our conditions. I mean, if you ask the question, have people struggled, say, with distraction? Of course they have. I mean, I can remember being a child sitting in a church service. I didn't have a phone, but I was plenty distracted. I was counting, you know, the ceiling tiles, you know, during the sermon. So human beings have always been distracted, but there is a difference. We've not always been able to be entertained. And so, for example, if you think back to, take someone like a John Wesley figure who was famous for just how much he got done in his life. He would have been traveling for hours upon hours upon hours on a horseback with what he would call a slack rein. So there was huge, vast kind of chunks of quiet, time for thought, for prayer, for reflection. And the same would have been true for Paul as he was walking from one city to another, engaging in friendship, having time for reflection. Now, in our environment, at any moment, we can pull out a phone. And like you said, there is the old Blockbuster. There is the old place to rent a film. Yeah. There is a casino. There is something, a game that is meant just to keep us distracted. There is, you know, all the sort of sports statistics and the videos. I mean, it's all present right there and built in a way that's intended to be addictive and to create distraction. And so there's a kind of vigilance that's required if we're ever going to have the quiet, and if we're ever going to have the reflection, and if we're ever going to have the conversation. We are up against a barrier that people in the past didn't face quite in the same way.
That is so true. You know, it's interesting. You know, I think we've all got our areas of weakness. You know, I've never been a big movie man. I only like watching movies that I've seen before, which doesn't really make you very prone to watch new stuff, because I always like to know what happens. And if it doesn't have a happy ending, then I'm not interested. But sports stuff, like, you know, so I'm not bothered about picking up my phone to watch a movie, but like sports news, I'm sucked in by that. And I'm always checking BBC Sport, and especially if there's games on, you want to see what's happening. And it's amazing how it does just suck you in. And that is so different, like you say, to before, when you just didn't have access. And it's amazing how the difference it makes just for something to be an option. You know, it's just an option, and that then instantly makes it attractive. It was kind of easier when, you know, you had, if you wanted to see the football highlights, you had to just wait till 10:30 on a Saturday night. You had no other option. But now there's so many more options there, which does just muddy the waters a lot.
Yeah, Thomas, as you're speaking there, I was just thinking, and Joe made this point that the technological advancements happen so fast. And so one of the challenges I've found personally is I find that I am addicted to my phone, technology, easily distracted as a result. And I've not really got the mental apparatus and given it the serious thought of how should I use technology so it's a help and not a hindrance to my spiritual growth and development. Joe, would you have any advice, any boundaries that we could set or just develop? How can we think about this Christianly? Because I feel like I'm just agree. The technology is discipling me, and it's made so that we could be addicted to it. And I find that I am so easily addicted to my phone, consuming information, watching things.
I think step number one, we've got to reappraise the value of our attention. So there's somebody that I hope people in the, you know, in the Free Church context maybe will know his name, Thomas Chalmers. And Chalmers asks an interesting question. He says, how can we be responsible for our love? Because in a real sense, it's already embedded. Our affection is already embedded in our heart. And his answer is the way that we're responsible is through our attention. Because there's this rule that whatever you invest your attention in, that ends up affecting what you love. Now, if you take that simple idea, then all of a sudden it changes the way you're going to think about your phone, because you realize that rather than distraction, in a sense, being an empty and a kind of valueless problem, I'm just distracted. It's just my attention. It doesn't really matter. You realize that, no, actually, distraction is an issue because you're meant to be attracted to something. And the way in which you actually are attracted to the right things is you invest your attention in what really matters, which is exactly what Paul tells us, you know, whether it's Philippians 4, you know, to set your mind on things that are good and true and noble, whether it's Colossians 3, set your mind on things above, or if it's Romans 8, where, you know, spiritual people, you know, set their minds on the things of the Spirit. So attention matters. That'd be the first thing I would say. A second thing would be just to realize we tend to think of technology as neutral, and I would challenge people rather to think of technology in terms of having a downward gravity. And the Bible prepares us to think about certain things with a kind of downward gravity. So money, for example, you can't really say that money is just neutral. If you listen to Jesus or Paul, you find out that no, like Paul says, money is the root of all kinds of evil. You have to be very careful. It tends to pull you directions you don't want to go. And there's something similar with technology. If we're honest, we constantly find ourselves slipping if we're not careful and vigilant with using these things. As it's often been said, first you make your tools, then you become them. And we don't want to be the tool of the tool. So, you know, recognizing there's this downward gravity, then all of a sudden you have to begin to take a book like Proverbs and ask these questions about, well, what are the principles of wisdom that can help me, in a sense, keep this within boundaries where it's not harmful, but at least it can be useful. And so, you know, you might think of different principles like, you know, don't stand at the door of temptation, that it's easier to avoid temptation than to resist it. And so for a lot of us, we're going to have to think carefully about when we know our phone creates environments of temptation. Or we might think of the proverb, you know, don't eat so much honey that you vomit. This idea that you can take something good, overconsume it with a bad result. Think of social media. You can overconsume. So how do you create some thresholds, some limits that make sure that you have an appropriate amount? None of us would probably sit there and eat an entire birthday cake all by ourselves, but we might sit there on YouTube and consume, you know, 3 hours of something that's just as harmful and destructive. So those would just be some thoughts to help people contextualize, you know, what wisdom might look like in this environment.
I absolutely love that, Joe. I love the fact that, you know, you can go back to Proverbs, you know, 3,000-year-old Proverbs, and actually find the wisdom, the advice that's so relevant actually to picking up your phone. That is such a brilliant example of how God's word is living, active. I'd love to just unpack a wee bit more about, you know, what you said about that kind of downward gravity. I've not thought of that before, and I think that's a really helpful thing to consider. You know, I look at my own life and I can see, you know, that's a spiral I've slipped into. You know, you pick up your phone and it's like, it's almost like the more you do it, the more frequently you want to do it. You know, we were talking about breakfast earlier. You know, if I had my way, I would be having like full Scottish breakfast every morning, because I mean, I absolutely love my food. And one of the reasons why I only have a slice of toast is not because that's all I want. It's because I know I have to limit the amount that I eat, because if I just, the more I eat, the more I want to eat. And I think that maybe that principle applies, you know, with that kind of downward gravity that we can feed something. Let me ask you, Joe, you know, is this something that you've had to kind of recognize in your own heart and in your own life? Is this something that you've battled with and that you've had to work through in your own discipleship as a follower of Jesus?
Absolutely. I think it's come in a lot of different ways. You know, I struggle. I'm a sinful person. I've got a sinful heart. So, you know, my heart is full of something like envy, where it's terrible to say, but I feel sad when I see people doing well. You know, if it's not me, I want to do all the good things myself. I don't want anybody else to do those things. And, you know, I find that if I spend time on social media, just that point of comparison, it's amazing how I can feel, you know, for example, that envy flare up. It's amazing to me how often I go to my phone for one thing and then end up doing two or three other things and forget that first thing. Often that first thing was really good. I was going to send an encouraging email. I just got distracted along the way, and now I'm on YouTube watching, you know, the slam dunk contest or something. So there's all kinds of ways that my phone, you know, it sets me up to be frustrated or even succumb to evil desires. And so... you know, just this constant wrestling with, it's a part of my life. I can't not have it, but I don't want it to dictate. And beyond the defensive, there's something beyond that. There's actually a good that I want, which, you know, when Paul's telling us, you know, set our mind on things that are above, that's a critical discipline for spiritual growth, that we need our mind on things of gospel truth. And so let's just push aside all the distraction. As Christians, we know that the mind has significance that secular people don't realize. And so if I want a life of prayer, if I want to live in communion with God, if I want these gospel truths not just to be outside, but really indelibly imprinted on my heart, then I've got to really think about where my mind is. And so that's the context where all of a sudden this matters a whole lot more than I would have probably thought otherwise.
So true. In fact, yeah, that's such an interesting thing to think about. You know, we read commands like that, you know, set your mind on things that are above, and we kind of think, oh yeah, that's a really good idea. And then we just go and check BBC Sport on our phone, you know, and we don't necessarily actually cultivate to think, how can I actually do that? So that's what I think, you know, I'd love to hear from you, Joe, you know, how do we actually do that? What are some of the really positive, practical steps that we can take just to develop that kind of mindset that Paul's calling us to?
I think one of the interesting things for modern people to think about is the way older Christians talk about the importance of meditation. And for a lot of us, meditation maybe sounds Eastern. It doesn't even sound Christian. But, you know, if you're talking, it doesn't really matter, you know, when you are, but the great spiritual writers of the past, they talk about this isn't just a discipline, but this is one of the most potent spiritual disciplines in terms of transformation, where you let your mind rest on truth until that truth does its work of enlightening the mind, of fanning the flames of the heart, and of really, you know, rooting itself within you. And so, you know, I think what one thing that we just really need to recover as Christians is putting aside whatever the distraction is, and really, whether it's the scriptures or whether it's a particular truth or whether it's a wonderful old hymn, but one of these things to take it and to just let our mind digest it, think on it. It's that John Wesley I mentioned before, that slack rein, finding the quiet, slow moments where we can just let our mind relish the things that God has revealed through Christ to us.
Yeah, Joe, that is so helpful. And the importance of the spiritual discipline that is meditation, learning from the fathers, those who've gone before us. I think that's a natural segue for us to talk about one of your latest books. You've recently written a book called Hymn Workouts, and it's 100 exercises to help set our hearts ablaze. And you mentioned just there that one of the things that we can do to help cultivate our spirituality and to think upon God is to use hymns. You want to tell us a little bit about your book, the motivation for writing it, and just how hymns can help us deepen and develop our love for God?
In many ways, maybe surprisingly so, this is a book for an information age. In an information age, a lot of people struggle to find time to read. A lot of people struggle to finish books. They start books, but they don't finish them. One of the wonderful things about a hymn is that it's poetry, and that what it does is it condenses information. So what a poet does is find a way to take the core truths that maybe a writer would take 200 pages to fully explain, but that hymn writer condenses it sometimes into 5 or 6 stanzas, unforgettable stanzas. And I would compare these stanzas. It's like if you go to a national park and there are a couple of benches that you've got to go and see the mountain from this particular place. What the hymn writer is saying, and something like When I Survey, is that you've got to view the cross from this particular angle, because if you see it, it's going to have a transformative effect. And so people who are distracted and who don't maybe feel like they've got the time for big books, with a hymn, what you can do is you can limit what you're trying to focus your mind on to just a few lines, and you can actually do that discipline of meditation, because it's built very much on images, provocative language, you know, rooted in the scriptures.
Yeah.
And it puts it just in that form it's for meditation. And so I think, again, it can just help us learn that discipline of reading slowly, reading deeply, reading carefully, and really allowing the mind to sit on truth instead of just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And we all know how much text we can see without any of it really landing in our hearts.
I think that's so helpful, and that's such a really good thing to think through. And it's not a connection that I've made before, you know, how, you know, hymns, you know, whether contemporary or old, you know, actually connect so powerfully with an age that's busy and that's distracted, where we actually don't necessarily have time to read through a a huge amount. I think that's just something that's so helpful to think through. And I love the way you emphasized meditating. You know, when I was growing up, I remember being told as a Christian, you need to pray and read, pray and read, pray and read. And I mean, and absolutely, that is really, really good and really helpful. But I remember reading, I think it was in Tim Keller, in his book on prayer, he also highlighted, you know, the importance of meditation. And it made me realize that actually what I needed to be told was pray, read, meditate. Pray, read, meditate. That had to kind of be a key part of, you know, when I'm praying to meditate on God, and to when I'm reading, to meditate on what I read. And what I love about this book is that, you know, we can hear that word meditate and you're like, okay, I want to do that. How do I do that? And the book is just, it's just a really practical practical guide to doing that, to taking that forward. So if I pick up the book today, if someone listening to us goes out and buy this, which we're all saying you should go out and buy this book, so if you get it on Kindle or if you buy it, what do you do with the book? I open it, what do I do with it, Joe? Tell us a little bit more.
Got to warn any potential reader, and this is why I'm going to scare off everybody that might buy the book, but it's called Hymn Workouts for a Reason. And that workout element, what it's meant to suggest, you can be given a wonderful script of a workout and you can show up at the gym, but you can go through the motions in such a way that you don't benefit. And there's a key element with a workout that makes all the difference, and it's exertion. And if we think about part of the problem with how we consume information in our age is we don't want any exertion. We want the bullet point blog post that doesn't make us think. Now, that's not ever going to work if we really want to benefit from something like meditation. And so it's set up, the plan is there, and it's simple. However, the key ingredient is going to be if someone is actually going to exert those mental muscles to think deeply. So the way it's set up, there's 100 hymns. They cover a very broad list of topics ranging from core gospel truths to how we're transformed, to spiritual disciplines, to difficult situations that we'll encounter. And what you do is you simply, there's a text at the top that gives it a little bit of context in the Bible. You know, you've got the hymn right there in front of you. And then in the margin, though, a lot of these hymns, they're really tapestries of scripture. And so you've got references or allusions to different parts of the Bible. And so what you're meant to do, 15 minutes is all it takes, but you read the Bible passage, you read through the hymn, and then you spend some time engaging it. You're thinking about what are the images that the hymn writer is using. You look up a couple of the verses and see some of the passages that the hymn is referring to, and you let your mind take that topic and use it as something to really let your mind dwell on. And whether it's, you know, I think what people will find is that the book will lead them into fields of meditation they've not visited very often. So maybe they're very familiar with thinking about the cross. They've never really thought about the ascension, or they've never really thought about the ministry of the Holy Spirit, or they've never really thought about death and what it is to prepare for death. But there's hymns on all of these topics, and I think it can really expand people's thinking if they're willing to go through the rich variety that's represented.
That's such a good point, because, you know, often we are just quite narrow in the things that we focus on, but there is just such a breadth, such an amazing breadth of truth for us to think about. Another thing I really love about this book is, you know, it's connecting us with our ancestors in the faith. You know, our podcast is Jesus Today, and we're trying to look at the challenges that we face following Jesus today. But as we do that, we absolutely want to emphasize that there is so much for us to learn from, and so many things, so many ways that we can find help from the people who were following Jesus yesterday, the people who were following Jesus 200 or 300 years ago, because actually so many of their challenges that they faced are actually the same. And I love the way the book makes that connection between the hymn writers of the past and the challenges that we face following Jesus today. Thinking more broadly, you know, in terms of that topic, thinking about that idea of working out and that discipline, you know, do you have other thoughts, other words of advice, Joe, that you'd give for our listeners, you know, of different stages, maybe particularly those who do feel a wee bit overwhelmed? There's maybe people listening just now who, you know, they think of their phone or they think of their social media use and they actually feel quite guilty and they feel a bit ashamed of the way things have been. you've got advice or help for anyone thinking or feeling like that?
I think the thing we all need to realize is, like, we just need to make a giant circle and realize that we are all in this addictive technology thing together. Nobody, yeah. Or rare is the person who can say, yeah, I don't need to raise my hand. This isn't my issue. And so part of it is just making it part of discipleship to talk about our struggle with our phones. And it's going to be all kinds of things. And for some, it will be pornography. For somebody else, it's just going to be the amount of time on social media. For somebody else, it's going to be something else. But it's going to be real struggles. And so I think in Christian community, how often do people get the opportunity to talk about the struggle they're having, you know, due to technology and the phone and social media and the rest of it? And so let's create conversations. Let's build friendship around this. Let's support and encourage one another. And even look to books like Proverbs to find those principles of wisdom that we can share with each other, recognizing that this isn't going away. And so we've got to be, wise as serpents when it comes to dealing with this particular aspect of modern discipleship.
That's such a good point, Joe. I think that is where, you know, that honesty and openness of a church family, of being brothers and sisters together in Jesus, recognizing that actually, you know, to varying degrees and in varying ways, we actually all face this problem. So we are recommending this book, Hymn Workouts by Joe Bernard. It's published by Christian Focus Publications, who are our sponsors for this podcast. And we are so thankful for that partnership with Christian Focus. We are particularly excited today because Christian Focus have said they will give away 5 free copies of Joe's book, Hymn Workouts. And but you've got to earn it. So what we're going to say is, the first 5 people who will send an email to hello@JesusTodayPodcast, who will send an email with a screenshot of you sharing this podcast with a friend, you're going to be the guys who get a free copy of Joe's book. So we want you to share a link with a friend, and we want you to take a screen grab of that, and we want you to send that to us. First 5 that come in, you will get a free copy of Hymn Workouts sent to you. And those of you who miss out on the free offer, please go out and buy this book. It's available online. It's available in Mound Books in Edinburgh, if you're nearby there. It's available at the Christian Bookshop here in Stornoway on my island, and it's available through all your big online retailers. Hymn Workouts by Joe Bernard, a fantastic place to start when you're battling the distractions of the information age.
Yeah, go out and buy the book. It's well worth it. It is a book that will really fan your love for God, and you'll be exposed to the rich theology of the past, both deep doctrine in hymns, but also deeply practical for your life. Joe, we've been doing in all of our podcasts this little time where we have a bit of fun. He's Right, I'm Wrong. And it's where Thomas and I discuss an issue that we disagree on. And I wonder, is there an issue we disagree on? So are you a big coffee drinker, Joe?
Like coffee? Yes, that's another addiction of mine. I've got the technology, but then also the coffee addiction. Yes.
So why don't we talk about our favorite coffee chain? So, Thomas, I think you and I disagree on where we would go for a coffee.
Yeah, this is a no-brainer. Absolutely no contest here. The best coffee chain, best coffee that you can buy in a widespread chain is Nero. Nero coffee is fantastic. I don't even know why the others even attempt to sell coffee. What you get at a Nero is just so good, so nice. And listen, I live about 200 miles away from my nearest Nero. This is so hard. So when I go away, one of the first places I go is Nero. Black Americano, no milk. That is proper coffee. I love a Nero.
Disgusting. Joe, do you have a favorite coffee chain?
Oh, I mean, Nero, I think I'd second that one. But I think for me, it's not so much of a favorite, but it's the one that I don't know how they've convinced anybody they're serving coffee, and that would be Costa. I don't know what that is, but it's certainly not, I don't think it's coffee. And that, just the whole kind of premise, I mean, they serve it in a fishbowl, first of all. So, I mean, you could take a bath inside this cup. But secondly, I mean, I think it's, I've been to one football match, okay? And somebody handed me a drink called Bovril. And I'm pretty sure that Bovril and Costa Coffee are the same.
I cannot believe you're sticking the knife in and turning it. I love Costa. I thought you as an American would love a fishbowl of coffee. And the coffee from Costa is delicious. Come on.
Terrible. No, you know, as for Starbucks, I don't like Starbucks.
Dark coffee. It is disgusting. You can't even enjoy it.
Nero is so good. I love a Nero. Starbucks, Costa, it's like, it's not even close. It's just, I mean, it's like comparing Runrig to rap and hip hop. No contest. That's good. I've got another one I'd love to ask about. We've been talking about workouts. This is a big controversial issue. Going to the gym, like going to the actual gym. Joe, what do you think about the gym?
I do like the gym. I kind of like recreating the gym in the garage, as you all would say. So the whole idea of a home gym.
There. I like that. Yeah.
That was my best attempt. But you know, bring it home so there's no driving, there's no commute, and get it done quickly in your own back garden. So yes, some home gym stuff is definitely I definitely like that.
Okay, Andy, what do you think of the gym?
I'm not a gym guy at all, but I don't mind the idea of doing it in your garage. In the sense of going to the gym and having to work out in front of people. I could never do it. I push pens all day when I'm writing things. Lifting weights in front of people, I just find deeply embarrassing. But I like going running. My outdoor gym would be the sense of I like cardio and just going to run. I do the 5K park run every Saturday. Oh, I say every Saturday. That's a lie. As often as I can. And that's my idea of getting a workout. What about you, Thomas? Are you a gym guy?
Well, Andy, absolutely delighted to say that for once, I totally agree with you. Joe, you might be our guest, but you're totally wrong. Gym, awful. Do not like the gym at all. And like what Andy said about exercising in front of people, I remember once in high school, this is a bit different, but it was a swimming event and you had to kind of compete for your house. And I was asked to do backstroke for my school house. Turns out nobody else entered the race. So I had to swim this race with one person in it, with the whole school watching, while I had the backstroke with all my peers sitting at the side watching. It was the most humiliating experience of my life. And I've just been scarred ever since. So like exercising in front of people, going to the gym where everybody's in their kind of weird fancy gym clothes and everything. Oh, like I would rather spend a night in the cells than spend an hour in the gym. Just not my thing. At all. So I'm definitely with you on this one, Andy. So listeners, what do you think? There's two things, right? Favorite coffee, you have to tell us. You have to just endorse Nero as the best coffee chain that you can get. But the gym, tell us what you think about the gym. Do you like the gym? Do you hate the gym? Would you rather a park run? These are the kind of hot topics that we want you debating as you listen to Jesus today. Joe, it's been absolutely amazing to have you with us. And, you know, what you've said today has been so, so helpful. And I think what I love about it is that it's so relevant because the distraction and pressure of a digital age is just a challenge for everyone who's following Jesus today. And we're really grateful for you coming on today. And we're also just grateful for the wider work that you're doing, both in preaching and teaching and in writing and in your online ministry. And we wish you all the very best with that. We pray that God would continue to bless and encourage you and your family and your congregation as you serve him. So a huge thank you, Joe, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
We'll be dropping into your podcast feed every 2 weeks, as we've said in the past. Please do give us any feedback on this episode. We would love to continue the conversation. Do follow us on social media and subscribe on your podcast provider. We'll speak to you again very soon on our next episode.